National Poetry Month reminds us that poetry is everywhere, especially at the University of Kentucky, where two distinguished poets, Nikki Finney and Frank X. Walker, teach in our English department. With us today on UK Perspectives is Clay Shields, who studies with Finney and is pursuing a master's in English literature. I'm Tom Goodell. Welcome, Clay.
Hi. Good to be here.
All right. First question. Why English literature?
I think the easy answer, like most people that pursue it, I like to read a lot, which started with my parents impressing that upon me, beating it into me as much as they could. But yeah, I considered a few more practical avenues, but it's just that I would rather struggle to make ends meet doing something I love than, I don't know, suffer through cases and stuff as a lawyer like my father. So not to downplay that, but yeah, I love it, basically.
That sounds very familiar because my career followed a similar path. I didn't have a lawyer for a parent, but I had a parent who wanted me to be a lawyer.
Yeah, it seems like a common thing. Like I also had a class with Richard Taylor, and he went to law school. He practiced as a lawyer and everything for a while, and then he just decided to write poems instead, and it seemed to work out pretty well for him.
How important would you say that poetry is in our modern society? I mean, we have so many distractions. We have cable television. We have Netflix. We have Twitter and Facebook. Why is poetry still important to us?
It's one of those things that is going to continue to be important whether people acknowledge it or not. And it's kind of sad that around the time when our current National Poet Laureate was elected, The Onion, this parody newspaper and everything, had this little article on how people were camping outside of his door and, you know, looking to him as like a prophet and everything, and just lampooning
the whole idea.
Yeah, the whole idea of a poet being, I don't know, a national voice or something like that. And I don't know, they nailed it like they typically do. I mean, that sadly, that is the case that, you know, obviously people aren't lining up outside of his door looking for his advice or anything else like that. So, yeah, it's sad that I feel, I don't know, that is the exposure that people get. I feel like a lot of the people that read that piece probably didn't even know that there was that inauguration going on or anything like that. But I don't know, there's obviously some hope because I rediscovered poetry about a year ago, and I also think that it's one of those things you don't really notice until you start talking about it and you get involved in yourself. And there's, even though it's kind of not on center stage here in Lexington or anything like that, but there is a really strong writing community here. I mean, poetry, creative writing in general, but I mean, like, Accents Publishing and, like, Nikki Finney winning and all of that stuff. There's a really strong community here, and but I guess I just generally want to say that it's sad, but I don't think it's as sad as I initially thought.
You're studying with Nikki Finney.
Yeah.
She's one of your instructors. What is the one thing you remember most about her classes?
I mean, just beaming at everything she said. I quote her all of the time now in little. I'm also taking an essay class, and I do a lot of writing, suffice it to say, as any English person does. But the one thing that I think I quote more often than anything else is that she once said, she was talking to me about where I saw this going, you know, those big questions of becoming a poet versus just writing poetry or anything like that. But I love that she said once, poetry is something that you have to decide to carry around with you. This idea of actually, I don't know, seeing the world through a poet's eyes, that it's something that you see the world through poetry and that it is a decision. I love the way she worded that. You have to decide to carry it around with you. And sometimes I forget it at home, but yeah, I'm trying to take that advice, I think.
Does studying poetry affect your other writing?
Absolutely. I've heard this articulated a few different ways, but Jane Vance, who I had a workshop with last semester, said it simply that all types of writing contribute to each other understanding each other and all of that. And yeah, I end up, and it's nice to kind of work in different mediums at the same time within writing, that you find things in one medium that may be better suited for another. Like, I'll write things in poetry and just think, no, that doesn't work for this poem, but maybe I can put it in this essay, and vice versa. And so, yeah, I do think that they enrich your understanding of where certain things are used, how, why, etc.
Well, you've brought some samples of your work, so let's hear one.
Okay. And before I start, a lot of people say that you should never introduce your poems or anything like that. But I do want to say that, like a lot of poets, I reserve the right to tweak this. So these are in no way final, perhaps. But let's see. I have two poems about my mother today. Another student that you interviewed in my class read one of her poems that was for this exact same assignment, which is we had to write a pantoum. It's an ancient form, Middle Eastern form. I think it's Malaysian, maybe. But it originally was two quatrains where the second and fourth line become the first and third of the next stanza, and so on down the poem in this kind of chain-like fashion until it kind of circles around to the beginning again, where the first line becomes the last line in a traditional pantoum. This has shifted and been reinterpreted many times, so each line is essentially repeated at least once. And these repetitions, ideally, will change their meaning as they move through the poem based on context. But anyway, my tentative draft of a pantoum. Deeper roots. The trees are snowing after the snow. My dog lifts his leg on some crocuses. I want to know the name of each flower, so I've been calling Mom when I see new blooms. My dog lifts his leg on some creeping phlox. Rock vines, flowers with five purple petals. That's all Mom needs to tell me their name. New blooms turn frost into dew into deeper roots. Rock tuff, crocuses with six purple petals, bunched together like ready-made bouquets. Little families that turn frost into deeper roots. Then, walking the dog again, I crouch near some fresh sprouts, a ready-made bouquet of green butterknife leaves I've seen before. My dog sniffs them, and I remember crouching, twisting a bulb dibber into the cooling earth. Daffodils, leaves I've seen many times before. My favorite picture of Mom, her smiling among my bulbs come to bloom from the warming earth. Their new petals, soft as two lips on a forehead. This is my favorite picture of Mom, standing among her garden, telling me the name of each flower. Soft new petals. Her lips peck my forehead. She is the trees raining after the rain.
Have you read this poem for your mother?
Yeah, she actually, my mom is a master gardener, and that's kind of where this came from. I have so many memories of just her, and she had this maniac insistence on replacing all of the grass in our yard with flowers and just hands constantly covered in dirt and all of that. I've read it to her once. I sent it to her. I don't know. It's hard getting her to really say much of anything about these types of things aside from just, you know, the mom bias of, oh, I love it. You know, but she did like it, or at least she told me she did. That's about all I know at this point.
And you have a second poem about your mother?
Yes, I do.
Well, let's hear that one.
I actually read this one to her. I read some poems at Morris Bookshop this weekend, and I kind of hoped that she wasn't going to be able to make it, because this is a really kind of a sad poem, and I didn't want to bum my mom out, you know? But yeah, she actually heard this for the very first time this weekend, and it is still a little tentative too, but it is almost done. I can feel it. It's really close. But yeah, I don't, she didn't tell me how she felt about this one, so who knows? Belly. One. My parents are trying, but Mom is thinking about the paintings she can't find time to finish or start. She tucks this feeling down into her belly, insoluble as chewing gum, where my twin and I tadpole race. Doctors deem the pregnancy high risk. While Dad does a virile strut around the law firm, Mom waddles around, doing the grunt work of checking homework and tying shoes for my already brother and already sister, learning to listen to her body, our bodies, lying down only when we, her not-yet sons, force her to. Her voids are mine, her hunger, my twins. Halfway through, she has two halves swelling with her longing for art. In utero, we twin telepath about the blue lines in our shared membrane, the trio of Mom's bass drum with our snares, the stories Dad reads to us, arguing, the one thing our family does well together. Two. A few weeks before we are born, my would-be aunt loses her characteristic articulacy, blood ballooning against, then sopping her speech centers. Another relative I will never meet. Not knowing what to do with this, Mom tucks her grief down with her longing, and it is the last thing I taste through my belly button. The doctor pulls Jack out first, and for 5 minutes, alone for the first time, I think I know what it is to lose someone, and I tuck it down into my belly.
You mentioned that these poems are drafts. How do you know, or do you know, when one of them is done?
That's a really good question. It's only happened for me a couple of times. So,
I suppose if you get published, it's done.
I guess, but even then, like, I mean, I've been, at the behest of Nikki Finney, I've been reading some Wendell Berry recently, and I've seen several published drafts, and he's not, it seems like that's kind of a recurring thing with poets in history, too. Auden used to do that all the time, that he would publish several versions of a poem, you know, over the course of a few years, and Yeats did the same thing. But yeah, I've never published a poem, with the exception of like literary journals at my school and stuff. I've never sent one in, though. But Nikki Finney has kind of made me a little bit more confident in my own skill. She has pushed me a lot, and I think I'm moving towards that. But as far as knowing when a poem is done, it's just something that you have, for me anyway. I don't know how it is for everyone else, but I just agonize over it until I can't anymore. Basically is what it comes down to, that I'll try to tweak something over and over and over again, and sometimes I'll have to, you know, put it in a drawer for a few months and come back to it. But yeah, it's just a feeling, I guess, is what it really comes down to. And consulting people, asking for feedback. It's a really good feeling when you go through the drafting process with someone who's helping you and everything like that, and neither one of you has anything else to say about it in the end. That when you finally both say, yeah, I don't have anything else to add, that's it, it's done. But it's a feeling, I guess.
So in a way, it is kind of like the birthing process.
Yeah, I suppose so. But at least that has a somewhat finite window.
Well, thank you. Clay Shields is a poet and a student at UK. You can hear our complete UK Perspectives interview at wuky.org. For WUKY, this is Tom Goodell.